Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, a candid conversation as we learn about types of dementias, such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, frontal temporal, and Lewy body, and the effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, overcome obstacles, and find positive outcomes. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Hey, everybody. I hope you're having a wonderful week. Boy, we had some wild, wild weather here in Denver. And we went literally from 3 days of 100 degrees to snow, and I got 6 inches at my house literally overnight. And I was running around like a fool trying to cover all my plants and everything. And, you know, I'm sure that a lot of people were struggling with the change of the weather, with the barometric pressure. And it was probably super confusing for all of our friends with diagnosis of whatever type of dementia has memory loss, because they look out the window one day, literally, and everybody's walking around in shorts, walking their dogs with tank tops on in 100 degree heat with hats and sunglasses, and the next day it's snowing. You know, so this morning I actually did an in-home assessment, which I do often, and I asked the person that I was talking with if he knew what season it was, and he said winter. And, you know, judging from the last 2 days, I gave him points for that. It's really not funny, I guess, but I thought it was kind of funny because ordinarily, if he would have said winter when it's really the heat of the summer and it is still summer, I would say, you know, you failed that question miserably. But nope, on this particular day, he gets 2 points for that one. Anyway, as I was talking with this gentleman and asking him questions in what we would consider a mini mental status exam. I've talked about this before. It's sort of just a red flag indicator of where someone is in their cognitive decline. And in this particular case, if a person has Alzheimer's, it's very easy to see when they have a complete short-term memory loss. But this particular person had Lewy body with Parkinson's disease. And so, as I've explained to all of you listeners at one time or another, Lewy body has, Lewy body has memory loss later in the presentation of the disease. It doesn't come first. Alzheimer's is the only one that does that. And as I was talking with this guy, he was so social, he was so sweet, but communicating with him was difficult because he was unable to finish a sentence. And when I asked about his family, his kids and his grandkids, he was going back to something that had happened recently, a death in the family, and talking about that person in their family. And I just could never get him back to the conversation. So I started thinking, well, today maybe communication being the key could be my topic of what I discuss with you today, because communication really is the key. And when a person has difficulties in how they talk and how they understand you, we often just think, well, this is a little spotty. He understands this or she understands that, but she doesn't remember what I said 5 minutes ago. Or they're having psychosis and they're seeing someone in the house, yet they can carry on a conversation that makes people that just enter the house and don't know that person think that they don't have any issues at all. How do we dig deeper? How do we know when that person has a problem when they're presenting fairly well? And unless you spend an hour with them like I did today, you may not ever see this. So as an example, I'm talking to this guy and he was fascinating. He was actually a Los Angeles Dodger player for several years and just wanted to talk about, you know, the farm system, because I asked him about it specifically, just to see what his long-term memory was, but about his playing days and some of his teammates and, you know, stuff like that. But yet, his wife was telling me that it's impossible for him to go in and make his own sandwich, although he can eat by himself. He can use utensils and things like that. We will see presentations like this where it's just a little spotty. Somebody can carry on a conversation and might be able to tell you a lot of information about their history. But when you're talking to them about, their own kids and their grandkids, they don't remember these things. So always remember that if you continue to communicate with this person that has whatever type of dementia it is, even if you cannot see or understand his or her responses, the disease is responsible for this. And different dementias present in different ways, but pretty much most of them circle back around, especially the ones I work with, to memory loss. And why is it that they can remember, you know, one of three words I've given them, but can't remember the other two when they were more closely associated? So I'll give you an example of that. I asked him to remember three words: doctor, wife, and daughter. And I pointed to his wife and daughter while I was saying that. And when I asked him again a couple of minutes later what the three words were, he remembered doctor, but not wife and daughter. Sometimes those things can be hurtful to family members. Like, why would he remember a random word when he doesn't even, you know, like see a doctor every day, but he sees his wife and daughter and can't remember that information? It's just critical that we try as well as we can to engage with them no matter whether or not what they're saying makes any sense or if they can follow the conversation. And I was trying to display to his wife that the whole thing about effective communication is it doesn't matter what he's talking about. Just go with it. Just answer him appropriately, like, wow, that's really cool, or what a great memory, even if it isn't what you were hoping that he would say. Because if you get mired down in what's lacking or what's not there in the conversation, then what happens is for one or both of you, that behavior is going to be reduced to a negative impact. It's going to hurt your feelings. They're not going to understand why you have a long face. These kind of things happen all the time. So, folks, as you're talking to your loved ones and they're talking in what I term word salad, meaning they'll start a conversation answering your question and all of a sudden it goes south to a whole nother conversation that you weren't even thinking about or talking about, or they're mixing up their family members with other family members or can't remember, you know, grandkids or kids. It's not intentional. Try as hard as you can to not take this personally, because by the time this happens in the first place, the person is in the later stages of the disease. I mean, you had to see it coming, right? Like, you have to be able to know that they've been having this little loss of a thought over here and a time period over here and a whole era over here and what they did for a living and, you know, all those kinds of things. Some of it remains, some of it doesn't. And strangely enough, you can get, again, with the spotty issues. Generally, I talk about people going back in time. This particular person could remember many years back when he played professional baseball. But when I asked him how old he was, he got the age right. That almost never happens. Generally, if I ask a person because they're talking about a certain era of their life, a certain time period, how old are you? They tell me how old they were at that time. And this guy said, I'm 78. And by God, he was. So here's some of the keys. When you're talking with somebody who's not understanding what you're saying, always, always allow that person sufficient time to understand what you are saying and give them time to respond to you. So again, I'm going to use real world stuff. as I asked this gentleman questions and he was trying to answer and he'd get off on something else and then he'd sit there for a minute and strangely enough, he'd say, "What'd you ask me?" "Well, I was asking you about your son and daughter." "Oh, yeah, yeah." And then he'd sit there for a minute and he'd think for a minute. I'm sorry it's taken me so long. And I would just say, "It's all right. Take your time. We're not in a rush. You're doing great. Always give kudos. You're doing fine. Don't worry about it. It's coming together. You know, we can talk about something else if you don't want to talk about that or if you can't remember it." And another thing I want to encourage you to do with effective communication is talk to the person about how they feel about their dementia. So I do this all the time. I ask my sister, "Judy, how are you doing? Are you struggling with anything? What difficulties is it causing you?" Don't talk to other people. Talk to them. Try not to talk around them. Talk directly to them. It matters. This guy today, I said, "How have you been doing with your Parkinson's?" And of course, you know, he started off with, "Well, you know, it's not great." And I said, "Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody walks around going, 'Yeah, boy, my Parkinson's made me had a great day today,' you know." He kind of laughed about it, but then he forgot what the conversation was. And next thing you know, we're off on topsy-turvy roller coaster. Can you follow whatever I'm saying? And all I did was smile at him and say, "Really? Yeah, wow, cool. All right, great." As family members, sometimes we have trouble doing that. Sometimes we get mired down in the loss of language and either get irritated with it or have trouble with therapeutic fibs, going where that person is. Maybe you want to keep them in the century that they're in or the day or date and season that they're in, but that can become a losing battle. So try as hard as you can to just follow whatever conversation, smile at them a lot, give them kudos, make them comfortable, and really engage them where they are. Your life will be so much better. And another example of that, I asked the gentleman if I could ask his wife a question. He said, "Sure, no problem." And so I said, "Tell me about his hallucinations. What is going on?" And he stopped me and said, "I see mice." So here I'd asked his wife and he answers. And then his daughter said, "And snakes." And so I said, "Well, you know." And here's one of those things that you can do to redirect. I said, "Snakes are actually good because they take care of mice. So garter snakes and bull snakes won't hurt you, and they will eat the mice and cure your mice in your house problem. So if you see a snake, it's just going after a mouse, and then when it disappears, it's gone back outside. So don't worry about it. Make a positive out of the negative." I know as you're sitting and listening to this, you can think of times and conversations that you've had where you were talking to someone and you got frustrated because they weren't following the conversation and you try to redirect them back to the conversation, as I do in assessments, but they never quite get there. And as a caregiver, I think that's one of the most stressful symptoms that you deal with when you're talking to somebody that literally can't carry on a conversation with you about something specific, but they can talk and talk and talk and talk about things that just don't make sense. Well, they make sense to them. They make sense to themselves. So if you can get over that, then I think you're going to be in good shape, right? So anyway, as you're talking to a person, give them extra time. Give them extra space. Don't rush them or continue to add to the conversation. Let them think for a minute. And if they just absolutely get lost, just say, "Well, that's okay. No worries." And they might look up at you and say, "What did you ask me?" Or, "What were we talking about?" Just repeat it. And if you never get there, who cares? Who cares? Save your sanity. Try not to let this stuff get to you. Now, what can you do if they can follow a conversation, but the short-term memory is just not there very well? So one of the biggest things you have to do is just speak slowly. Don't rush. Slow everything down. Try to have a conversation with them that is calming, that seems positive. Try to keep a smile on your face and just slow the pace of the words coming out of your mouth. That might help them a little bit, because what happens, and we all know this, if you speak quickly, you add too many words, you don't give them time to respond, you'll get some kind of negative reaction. They'll get upset. They'll yell at you. They might accuse you of something. We call that a delusion. So try to work through those, okay? And think to yourself when you're talking to them and you're trying to give them a few minutes, count to five or something. Count to five in your head, okay, after you've asked them a question. Give them at least 5 seconds. At least 5 seconds. And if you can, always try to relate whatever the question is to something historical. Like, say, you want to say, do you want to go in and make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich for lunch? And they don't follow you, or they can't carry on the conversation. You could say, do you remember when we were younger, when all we had was Top Ramen noodles and peanut butter and jelly sandwiches? Bring back an old memory that might let them engage with you on a different level. At that point, they might be excited to talk about that peanut butter and jelly sandwich and that Top Ramen noodle and come into the kitchen and try to help you make lunch, okay? And when you do that, try to limit the complexity of making that sandwich. Just ask them to help you by pulling out a knife if they still recognize utensils. Ask them if they can take a piece of bread out of the loaf. Use one or two step simple verbal commands as you're talking to them. It will make your life so much easier. Just break everything down into something really simple, okay? So I'll pull out the jelly. I'll get the peanut butter. And even explain what you're doing. I'm going to put the peanut butter on your bread. Do you want it thick or do you want it just kind of light? Do you want a lot of jelly or do you want a little bit of jelly? Ask some questions like that to engage them. Ask them if they might like to put their own peanut butter on, if that's possible for them to do. Remember, if they don't use it, they're going to lose it. So it's better off if you engage them in this and try to get them to help you. And when you're asking them to help you in this particular scenario, use very specific verbal prompts, okay? Open the bread. Take the tie off. Good job. The tie is the green thing. Maybe they'll recognize it. Maybe they won't. You have to twist it. Open the bag. Pull out a piece of bread. You wouldn't think you'd have to break something down so simple. But guess what? You do. You do. And if you're willing to put in that time, they feel like you understand them. They don't feel challenged. They don't feel judged. And the chances of them being able to help you make that sandwich increase significantly. Listen, folks, you can either do this the hard way or you can do it the easier way. Just use simple one or two word commands and make sure that you make them as simplistic as possible. Lose the complexity of everything that you're doing. It will benefit you wholeheartedly. Okay, so let's use another example, like getting somebody out of bed and you want to get them to stand up. If they're in late stage, how would you do that? Again, using the one or two steps, you might say, roll towards me. Maybe if they're on the back, roll towards me. That's something easy somebody could do. Something they could easily respond to. And then sit up. Here, do you need some help sitting up? Have them sit up by themselves. Hold right here. Hold right here. And maybe you grab or point to a bedpost or even just the side of the bed that they can hold on to. And then ask them to stand up. And make sure they stand up slowly. You don't want their blood pressure to drop significantly and then they pass out on you or they fall. Okay? So when you're doing this, another example of how this could go wrong. Hey, I need you to get out of bed. Okay. Why? I'm comfortable. And then they lay there. I need you to get out of bed. Well, it isn't that they didn't hear you. They heard you the first time. They just didn't remember that you said it. And then you're not actually helping them with the cueing steps to do that. So you could use other ideas like, I've got coffee ready in the kitchen. It smells so good. I've made breakfast. Why don't you sit up, roll over here and get up and let's go have some breakfast. You need some help? And then you can give the specific instructions. These things will make your life so much easier. So things you shouldn't say, don't say go get dressed or go get ready for bed, because they may need those same cueing skills to put on their pajamas or take off all their clothes or help getting dressed. And just saying, go get dressed, means what? I don't know how to do that anymore. So maybe you have to go into the bedroom and say, we'll get you some underwear and some socks out here. And let's put these on. Here, why don't you sit down and put your leg through this hole, put your leg through that hole. All right, stand up. There we go. Now we got to pull them all the way up to your waist. Talk them through these things. Let's sit down and put your socks on. Here, would you like to wear shorts? It's summertime right now. Or would you like to wear pants? They could probably answer. Maybe they can. Maybe they can't. If they don't, then choose one for them. But give them a choice. Don't just go grab something out of the closet and think that they might want to put it on. It takes me forever to decide what I want to wear for the day. I'm a ridiculous case on stuff like that. So think about those kinds of things. How do you walk them through simple choices, no more than two at a time, pants or shorts? Do you want this blue shirt or would you like this black shirt? Things like that. And when they do get dressed and they come down, don't have open-ended questions like, what do you want for breakfast? Okay? That's an open-ended thought. It takes a complete cognitive process to come up with an answer. And the chances of them being able to say, especially in the late stages, I want bacon and eggs, or I want a donut or something like that, aren't very good. So you can do an either or choice. Would you like a bagel? Would you like an orange? Or you could say something like, do you want Cheerios? Point to the Cheerio box. Do you want eggs? Point to the eggs for breakfast. These kinds of things will help you with effective communication when somebody is in mid-stage, moving to late stage, and struggling with conversation. So if you are struggling on all those levels like I'm talking about, I want you to use kind of some really cool, easy phrases when you're interacting with somebody. Like I kept saying to this guy today, you're doing fine. You're doing great. Don't worry about it. I had him draw a picture of a clock, and he had actually said to me, I'm a good test taker. I said, well, good. Let's take a test. Let's do some testing here. And so I had him draw a circle and a triangle, and then I drew one myself, and then I turned the paper over and had him draw it. And much to my surprise, he was able to do it. So when I had him make a clock, I said things to him like, take your time, you can do this. I was just encouraging him with positive statements. Good job. Oh, that's wonderful. You did a great job on that clock. He didn't get anything right on the clock. You know, but it doesn't matter. The point is, I don't want to break down his dignity. I don't want to break down his spirit. So I told him he did a fantastic job on it. Just the fact that he did it at all really was a good job. So, yeah, everything's okay. Okay, I locked all the doors and the windows. I got the snake out of the house. Positive affirmations. Try to turn negatives into positives as much as you can. And for goodness sake, people, avoid any negative words. Don't argue. Don't try and reason with them. Most of the time, the frontal lobe has lost its judgment and reasoning ability. And you're trying to explain something to them and they have no clue what you're talking about. Direct statements said in a kind way can help you enormously. So, you know, try using logic only when it's for yourself. They're not understanding what I'm saying. I need to take my time. I need to come up with a plan here of giving two choices or whatever it is so that they don't get upset. Don't yell at them or scold them if they get it wrong. Let it go. And for goodness sakes, don't raise your voice. Don't start talking loud or showing on your face that you're angry or even making fun of them. Dad, don't you know your grandkids? You should know your grandkids. Don't you know your brothers and sisters or, you know, things like that. Don't ever make fun of a person. You wouldn't like that if you were a person that was of sound mind. So why in the world would you do it with somebody that has cognitive impairment and memory loss? Okay? So don't say things like, you make me so angry, or, you know, why are you so stubborn? Come in here and let me help you. Don't say things like that. Or why are you being mean today if they say something to you that is a delusion, like you've stole my purse? Don't turn around and say, why are you being so mean? I'm telling you, that's not going to get you anywhere. Or telling somebody they're not being very nice. Use those tell me more theories that I always tell you about. Tell me what the purse looked like. What color was it? When was the last time you saw it? Can you tell me? Yes or no questions. Those kinds of things will help you. And just make sure that you're always, always, always using kindness and compassion when you're talking to somebody. It matters. Just think for yourself, just for a minute. What if you were speaking to somebody and your sentences didn't make sense? How would you want them to help you? How would you perceive their help? Would you think it was misguided? Would you want them to leave you alone? Would you want them to point out everything you're doing wrong? No, probably not. When we come back, we're going to finish this conversation about good communication and ways that you can maybe change your perception or your outlook on the way you are working with your person with any type of dementia that has memory loss. We'll be right back.
Living and working with Alzheimer's and other dementias can often be challenging. Summit Resilience Training provides education utilizing non-medical approaches for those who work with our friends affected by dementia. Believing families still need one-on-one assistance, we provide classes which help them understand the diseases affecting their loved ones, offering strategies and techniques for success with activities of daily living and working with confusing behaviors. We offer in-home assessments to clarify symptoms of dementia diseases and help families work together to find moments of joy while living with memory loss and impairment. Education programs instilling person-centered care philosophies are offered for professional caregivers working in communities and homes, which can be customized for their staff. Training is also available for first responders, such as law enforcement, fire, and EMT personnel. We are passionate that people with dementias such as Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and others are approached with compassion and understanding, and those who work with them have all the tools they need for success. Call us at Summit Resilience Training, 303-420-6988, to schedule a class or in-home assessment. Visit our website at summitresiliencetraining.com for more information.
Welcome back to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
All right. So I've been talking today about good, effective communication skills. And why is it important to sort of step back, take a step back, and think about where your person is? Where are they in time? Where are they with being able to communicate? How frustrated are they by short-term memory loss? Are they asking repetitive questions over and over and over again? If they are, then this show is for you, because if your loved one is asking questions over and over again, you're not reaching the unmet need that person has. And I can't even tell you how critical that is. You have to be able to understand a little bit of what they're saying and let the rest go by the wayside with a smile, with a absolutely, or, well, that sounds fascinating, or something like that. Because if you are not tuning in to where they are, you're tuned out. And if you're tuned out, it's not going to work. And when it gets down to, I'll give you an example again from the in-home assessments I do. Today, the person I was talking to knew his daughter by her name. He does not remember her birthday. He does not know what she does. I said, tell me about your daughter. He couldn't do it. So I always tell family members, you need to identify yourself and other people often. Because when they're at the stage where communication is skewed and not working well, we're in this word salad zone of conversations not making sense, chances of them not recognizing their spouse, their children, their grandchildren is huge. And people think it's funny when I say this, but I recommend to people a lot to wear name tags, like get those ones you can get that stick on your clothes from Office Depot, and especially if grandkids are over, and write their names. Have them have a little fun and get some markers out and let them put flowers or, you know, pictures and drawings and things around. You know, make their name tag as pretty as they want. You could just make it a fun activity, especially for children, and have them wear that name tag so that the person with the dementia and the memory loss is able to identify them that way. It's hard for children. I don't care how old you are. The woman I was with today, the daughter was 56, and it still hurts when your loved one doesn't recognize you. So always, always tell them who you are, or call them by name. Hey, Dad, you know, my siblings and I are just wondering, you know, if you're getting excited about Halloween or something, you know, and name the siblings. It's devastating when, especially like somebody like me comes into their home, and this particular man had four children and he only remembers one. But yet he can carry on a conversation. And the wife told me that the last time somebody was in that came because they were from a daycare center and they were evaluating him, she said she thought that the guy was fine, and this was 6 months ago, until he got up to go to the bathroom and came back and asked his wife where the bathroom was in the house. And she had completely missed the memory loss. And so I said, well, you know, I've been doing this for 25 years. I can carry on a conversation with somebody and ask them over and over to see if they just got derailed on the conversation or they just cannot follow the thread. And I can see that pretty easy. But a lot of people cannot. So when you walk into a room, tell them who you are. Say your name in like a secondhand way. Like I said to him. I was trying to tell him my name and see if he could remember my name. And I said, my husband said, Jill, you're driving me crazy trying to save all these plants. And I asked him a little bit later, did he know what my name was? And much to my surprise, because he has Lewy body with Parkinson's and the short-term memory loss is new to him, he was able to say Jill at the end of the talk. But I had reminded even my name maybe 5 minutes earlier or something like that. And he remembered it. Now, his family, when they introduced me, they introduced me right at the beginning, and then I introduced myself to him. But as you're talking and other family members or friends are in the house, call them by name as often as you can if you're not using name tags, just to help, okay? And always address the person with the dementia. Call them by their name multiple times, because pretty soon they're not going to remember their own name. So just make sure you say, well, hey, Jill, you know, how much snow did you get at your house or something like that? Always try to find a way to add their name in a sentence or a conversation. And for goodness sakes, I know delusions are difficult, but go along with that person with whatever their belief of what they are saying is true or not, okay, and avoid arguing with them or trying to convince them if it's not true. Because guess what? It will only frustrate you and that person with the diagnosis and make your situation worse. It'll absolutely make it worse. You can't win an argument with a person with Lewy body or Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or anything else. You just can't. And you can use their view to your advantage. You really can if you make them feel safe and more assured in the conversation. So don't say there's no bugs on the wall. Say, wow, how many are there? Do I need to get a fly swatter and smack them off the wall? Play with it. Somebody asked me about a week ago, why do you think it's okay to lie to somebody and say that there's bugs on the wall? And I said, you don't have to lie to them and say there are bugs on the wall. You can say, just ask questions, the tell me more theory. How many bugs are there? Tell me what you see. Their belief is their belief. Your unwillingness to embrace it and try to see it from their perspective and reduce their fear is going to be your loss if you don't get in the game and try to work with them, because they're going to have them whether you like it or not, or they're going to they're going to see what they see the way they see it. And if you think you can change it or alter it in some fashion, you can't. So why don't you just try to find out what it is they're seeing? Learn more about what their perception and what their vision is telling them, and it might give you some insight into where they are in the disease. It's really a win-win if you can make them feel comfortable and not freak out about delusions, which are things that they believe which are not true, or hallucinations, psychosis, where they see people that aren't there, they see items that aren't there, things of that nature. Okay? So think about those kinds of things. Here's another one. Never, ever, ever, and I've talked about this before, but again, this is something that has come up in some in-home assessments lately. Don't tell a person that their loved one has died. It blows my mind that people tell somebody with Alzheimer's or Lewy body that someone has died. Don't do that, because that person may have been gone 20 years, right? All you're going to do is make them upset. They're going to think this is something that just currently happened. Not a good communication skill. It is not. So say something that will address their need. Do you want to talk about that person? What do you remember best about that person? What would you say to them if they were in the room with you? And if they really get stuck on they want to see somebody, say, well, that person can't come today. But they're somewhere safe. They're okay. Don't worry about it. Maybe we can get a hold of them on another day. They're not available today. We're not going to be able to talk to them. That's not a lie. You're working with whatever their thought process is, but it's not a lie, right? It's not a lie. So let go of those kinds of things. They won't serve you well. Now, if they think somebody's coming to the house, or, oh, here's a good example. The guy that I was talking to today, he gets up in the middle of the night and thinks he has to go on a fishing trip. And he'll start getting dressed for it and everything else. And I said to the wife, I said, you could go leave the room and go write a note and say, you just got a note under your front door that says the fishing trip has been canceled. Somebody's sick. Somebody can't make it. The weather's horrible at this place that they're going. And tell him he can go back to bed. Work with it. Come up with good ideas. And yes, is that a therapeutic fib? Of course it is. Will it work? Probably. Your other alternative is to try to argue with them and tell them, and then they're just going to get angry and walk out of the house. And I'll have to ask you, how's that working for you? It's not going to work, right? So the whole point of today's show is really just to help you with better communication skills, with better thought processes yourself as the caregiver when you're working with somebody that has cognitive impairment. When their thought process is not working, they lose the ability to express themselves, and they'll get frustrated. And if they're having difficulty expressing a thought, you may be able to guess what they're trying to say. And if you're trying to guess, ask them, am I close? Is this what you were thinking? It's a yes or no question. That generally will help them to feel comfortable. You could also say, are you worried about that person? Is there something that you need to tell them? Just ask questions that can help them with a 50-50 chance of getting it right. Yes or no questions make life so much easier. And really try to focus on some little piece of what they've said that can help you get to what it is they want or need, okay? And now that particular guy wanting to get up and go be with his friends, I'll tell you what, I would, if he was still going on and on or wouldn't go back to bed, I would go grab maybe a photo album or some photos of the friends that he used to fish with and engage him in fishing stories and things that he enjoyed as he was fishing with that person, and maybe get up and make some coffee or fix something to eat or something like that. And if you're retired, then you can go back to bed later if you want to. But if you engage them somehow, rather than just try to say, no, you're not fishing and that person doesn't even live here and there's no fishing trip planned, go back to bed. I'm telling you, that will never, ever, ever work for you. And one other thing you can do with effective communication is make sure that you don't have a lot of bright lights on or the TV on, and especially in this political climate that we're in right now with the COVID and all the stuff that's going on around the country. Stay away from the channels that are doing the 24/7 negative news. That person is going to literally tune you out if you're talking and focus on that negative energy and they're going to absorb that and essentially kind of spit it back out at you. And I don't think that you want that situation going on in your house. That is not going to help anybody. All right? Now, can you use other forms of communication, non-verbally, as an example? So I like to maybe touch the arm of a person when I'm talking to them. I will often, if I'm trying to redirect somebody, like in a care community or a memory unit or something, I will gently touch the back of their elbow to get them to turn left or right the way I want them to go. There are ways that you can tactily touch someone and use the senses to help guide them, using smells in your house, coffee, bacon, baked bread, things like that will guide people to a place of comfort and peace. Baking brownies. We're coming around the bend where we're going to get into fall, which is awesome. It's my favorite time of year where we can, start making more pies and stuff like that and get into holidays and the things that take us back to the days that we love and the days of old. Utilize those kinds of senses, those memories that bring comfort, just through smells and noises and music that remind them of a time that they like. Another way you can do it is just be aware of your facial expressions. Smile when you come into a room. Smiles are awesome because they give you encouragement. And definitely, if you're smiling, you're not frowning, right? You're not showing anger or upset on your face. So smile more. Smile when you're around that person. Point to objects. Name the objects. I just sneezed. Would you give me a Kleenex and point to the Kleenex box? I'm telling you, pointing, touching, handing the person the object, things like that. Here, you've got your little runny nose. I'm going to hand you the Kleenex box. Take a Kleenex. Again, those one or two word instructions that can help make them more successful. Okay? Make eye contact with the person when you're talking to them, but don't stare at them. That may really make that person interpret that you are angry with them or that you're unhappy with them in some way, or they could consider it threatening. When you get up out of a chair, move slowly, calmly, steady movements. Don't run from one place to the other. Don't act like you're anxious or agitated. They will feed off of your energy. I don't know how many times I've had to say that on this show. It makes a big difference when you can calm yourself. And definitely identify how that person likes nonverbal communication. Do they like hugs? Do they like hand-holding? Do they like it when you touch them? Is that something that calms them? If you were to pat them on the shoulder after you've helped them get dressed or they've taken a shower or something like that, and you were to give them a reassuring smile, does that make a difference? Don't discount how much positive energy, smiles, kisses, hugs, touching somebody, dancing with someone, just being overall positive in your approach with them is going to affect their demeanor. It's huge. It's absolutely huge. They might give you some nonverbal clues as well. So a couple of those you might want to think about are maybe going into the kitchen a bunch of times. They keep walking in and out of the kitchen, in and out of the kitchen. Are they hungry? They could be hungry, but they don't tell you that they're hungry. Maybe they have a sad face, or they're fidgeting in their chair, they're wringing their hands or something like that. Maybe something hurts. A good example of that is the guy today kept kind of putting his leg out and shaking his foot. And You know, that let me know that maybe he needed to get up and move around because he seemed like that was affecting him. He could have just had pants that didn't fit right or something or didn't feel right. Maybe he had to go to the bathroom. When people are fidgeting and things like that, there's something they're trying to tell you. And if it's been 2 or 3 hours since they've been to the bathroom lately, certainly I would guide them in there for sure. Laughter and smiling can indicate that person's happy and they like their current activity. So don't let that get lost on you. And that's a great time for a hug. If they're grabbing at their clothes or taking them off, that might mean that they're too hot. If they're rubbing their arms and they're kind of going up and down on their arms, maybe they're cold. People with dementia, their amygdala, which is right by the hippocampus, kind of near your brain stem, it controls your ability to be hot or cold and know when your body temperature is changing. And that gets skewed and suddenly doesn't work. And so that person may not be able to tell you if they're hot or cold. So you'll see the nonverbal cues that they're giving you by tearing their clothes off or putting more on. Okay? You can use visual reminders if the person is not verbal or you're having trouble communicating on a verbal level. Tape arrows that go to certain places like the bathroom this way or put signs up. Better yet, take a picture of the bathroom and put it on the bathroom door so they know. Put a picture of them in bed on their bedroom door so they know that that's their room. Put a picture of you in your bed. Take a selfie or something and put it on your door so they'll know that's their room. Do the same things with your cabinets and drawers. Take pictures of what's in it. Is underwear in this drawer? Are socks in this drawer? Are pants and shorts in this drawer? Are pajamas or whatever it is in these other drawers? For women, bras. This is something, you know, we may need a whole drawer for just our bras and stuff like that. Take pictures of those and put them on the dressers. I think that would make really, really great signage for you. And then you can use simple written instructions too. Like in the bathroom, you could put brush your teeth. Take a picture of somebody brushing their teeth and put it there. Or just write, brush your teeth and put it right above their toothpaste and toothbrush. Wash your face. You can use simple written instructions so that they remember to do it when they're in there. They can actually see the words. Wash your face. Comb your hair. Brush your hair. Things like that. Okay? And please, 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 just remember, always, always, always use affection with the person. Put your arm around them. I cannot say how valuable a hug is. Just sitting together with somebody, just talking to them and letting them know that you love them. Tell them that you love them. Use these kinds of communication, verbal, nonverbal, to get you where you need to go. Okay? And, you know, last but not least, using cueing skills for everything. I've talked about it in the beginning of the show. You know, put your arm if you're trying to get them to get dressed, for as an example, and you've already given them a couple choices on a shirt or a color of the shirt or which one do they want to wear, you might then have to give them cueing skills on, do you want to put the shirt on yourself? Are you able to put the shirt on by yourself? Or do you need my help? I'd be happy to help you. And smile at them when you're saying that. If they just stand there, then say, here's the hole. Put your arm through here. They may not recognize their arm. It's hard to know where these places are. So you could just touch their arm or where they're at in time. So you could just touch their arm and say, this is your arm. Put it through this hole. Guide them with these cueing skills. All these kinds of things. Visual, verbal, tactile, communication using words, communications not using words, sensory, all this stuff, smells, will help you so much. And literally, please use the upcoming months with all that fall has to offer. Use those various smells and old time memories to help make the days pass better and make them a little bit shorter. Days can be very, very long, especially with the COVID and everything that we're dealing with. Make the days shorter and more enjoyable, and certainly look into how you can turn anything that is interesting to that person into an engagement piece or an activity. Well, this may have been very elementary today, but honestly, these are the things that people forget as the disease progresses and gets further down the line, and everything changes. The communication skills and the keys all change back to more childlike behavior and simplified instruction when the person reaches this stage. I hope it's been helpful for you. And by the way, I have a new email address. You can email me at srthelp.com. I have abandoned Jill at Summit Resilience Training because it is so long. So now it is srthelp.com. You can always email me with your questions, subjects you'd like to talk about, and I would be happy to address them on the air. And anything I can help you with makes my heart full and happy. So I love you all out there in Caregiver Nation, Care Partners, and I will see you next week on Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
You've been listening to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz. To learn more about her resources, services, classes, or to book speaking engagements, visit Jill's website at summitresiliencetraining.com. A new podcast drops every Tuesday, so join us as we learn more about dementias, resilience, and overcoming obstacles to find a positive outcome. Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz can be found on your favorite podcast provider. Please subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. Musical and technical support provided by Brian Hunter. See you next week.